Oh, happy day.
No, talk normal. Literally, just say a sentence.
It's Jeannie, and I'd like to mention I'm on the microphone this morning. Honk your horn if you're on it. Antonia, we are taking a trip down Broadway today.
Like we're walking there?
No, like Broadway musicals, Antonia. Because my favorite musical, In the Heights, written by Lin-Manuel Miranda, turned 10 this year.
Ooh, many know him from Hamilton, but he was a big deal before then.
Did you see it on
Broadway? I actually haven't seen In the Heights.
No, I just got chills.
I'm sorry.
I have seen it enough for both of us.
Okay, cool.
How about that?
Yeah. I have a question.
Yes.
Do you have every word of In the Heights memorized?
Yes.
Every single word?
Probably.
I mean, could you perform the entire play right now?
Lights up on Washington Heights. Up at the break of day, I wake up and I got this little punk I gotta chase away.
Pop the great at the crack of dawn, sing while I wake down the
okay. My name's not a Snobby. But
anyways. Now I'm ready to hear about In the Heights.
Okay.
I am Snobby and you probably never heard my name.
Report okay, so do you at least know what In the Heights is about?
No, I know that it's in the Heights, Washington Heights, which is actually really close to where our offices are, but I have no idea what, like, the plot of the musical is. So what is it?
All right, so I'm going to give you a little background here. Ready?
Nice, yeah.
All right, In the Heights is a story of a Dominican guy in Upper Manhattan who runs a bodega. But he's always kind of questioned where is home, right? Is it in the Dominican Republic or is it here in New York City? So I saw In the Heights for the first time in April of 2008. It opened in March of 2008.
Okay.
And I walk out of there and my mind is blown. And I call my parents who live in Atlanta and I'm like, you have to come to New York. You have to see this show because they're Dominican. And then I took every person, family member, friend that was visiting. So 10 years later, I'm looking back at In the Heights, and while I know why it was important to me personally, I am now realizing that it's actually important to a lot of people. And it was important to the trajectory of Latinos on Broadway.
Right.
Because if you think of, like, what are the big musicals that had kind of a Latino story, you have
West Side Story.
And In the Heights.
So West Side Story is a love story.
Yeah, it's two star-crossed lovers, a Puerto Rican girl and a white guy set against two dueling gangs on the streets of New York in the 50s. It's basically Romeo and Juliet.
Right.
You have seen that, right?
Yeah, of course. I've seen West Side Story like a million times.
Okay, good. West Side Story was the first time that a Broadway show was about Latinos. But it wasn't a positive Latino story. It was about gangs. And as far as I really know, that was it in terms of Latino representation in this major American medium. But Antonia, I want to take you behind the curtain because there's actually a bigger history of Latinos on Broadway, and that's what we're going to talk about today.
Oh my God, I'm excited. I know nothing about any of that history.
Neither did I.
Okay. From NPR and Futuro Media, it's Latino USA. I'm Antonia Cerejido. And today, The Breakdown, a tale of two musicals. Here's producer and Broadway nut, Jeannie Montalvo.
Okay, Anto, meet Robert.
Hi, my name is Robert Viagas. I spent 20 years as founding managing editor of Playbill.com, and I'm now full-time author.
He knows everything there is to know about the theater, and actually specifically Latinos on Broadway.
Broadway actually was much more open to Spanish people than the rest of the culture was for many, many years. A lot of people who came from Spanish countries originated on the stage in vaudeville on Broadway.
I'm just going to jump in here and say that when Robert says Spanish people, he's using the term the way it was used in the early theater days, meaning back then, anyone coming from any country that spoke Spanish was called Spanish.
Before there was the web, before there was television, before there was even radio, there was an entertainment form called vaudeville. The way people would go and be entertained was to go to theaters. A lot of the theaters that are now movie theaters were originally vaudeville theaters. And they would have a bill of sometimes 8 to 12 acts.
So kind of like a variety show.
It was a variety show.
So surprisingly, there were Latinos on stage during the vaudeville era. But Robert says they were stuck playing mostly stereotypes of themselves.
But what we associate with Broadway really came about at the beginning of the 20th century.
And those stereotypes basically got passed on to early Broadway. We see a lot of them pop up in the early 1900s.
The sense of humor has completely inverted in the past 100 years. In those days, if you said something sexual, you could lose your career. However, doing ethnic humor was very popular. There were a lot of, especially in New York, there were a lot of different ethnic groups that were all coming together at the same time. And having these stereotypes was kind of like a Cliff Notes way of getting to know various people.
These ethnic stereotypes were surface level. They weren't real people. They were to make people laugh.
A lot of people that you associate with film, like Lupe Velez, she actually started on Broadway. She was in a show produced by Ziegfeld called Hot Cha.
I just want to be Conchita without a true love.
Called what?
Hot Cha.
Even Carmen Miranda, who you associate with the films, with her big hat full of fruit, she actually also started on Broadway in 1939 in a play called The Streets of Paris.
Ay, 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 ay.
Cole Porter wrote a show called Mexican Hayride. Rodgers and Hart wrote a show called Too Many Girls in 1939. Desi Arnaz was the star of Too Many Girls, and he had a song with a great title, She Could Shake the Maracas.
She could shake the maracas.
I'm so slow. I just picked up on what the maracas meant. So how does West Side Story get made in this time where Latinos are essentially a punchline?
Well, I'm going to tell you. In the 1950s, this theater power team, Stephen Sondheim, Leonard Bernstein, Arthur Lawrence, and Jerome Robbins, decide they want to do this modern take on Romeo and Juliet. Originally, their plan was to do a Catholic-Jewish conflict. But the 1922 musical Abby's Irish Rose did that. So they started to look for something else. And they're reading the papers, they're seeing gang violence, and they're like, this is our ticket. This is what's going to drive this show.
And when they were reading the papers, they were reading specifically about Puerto Rican gangs?
There were a lot of youth gangs of different ethnicities in the 50s. But Puerto Ricans were in the news a lot because after World War II, New York saw the largest number of Puerto Ricans coming to the city. The number of Puerto Ricans from 1940 to 1970 increased by more than 10 times. So Broadway's a New York City thing, right? So including Puerto Ricans made sense because it was a reflection of New York City at the time. Anyway, the creators come up with this idea for West Side Story, but as they start pitching it around, they keep getting rejected.
Do you know why they were getting rejected?
I do. This is Leonard Bernstein, the composer, from an audio documentary NPR made when West Side Story turned 50.
They said no. They said there's nothing in it anybody can sing. It's too depressing. It's too advanced. It's too crazy. There are too many words in the lyrics. Nobody can remember them. The intervals, it's too rangy. It's a little, who can sing? Maria. Nobody can sing notes like that. I just read that. Impossible.
Maria, I've just met a girl.
So they had no problem with the Puerto Rican storyline.
Which is funny, because that's what you would think, right?
Yeah.
In the 50s, like...
They just thought Maria was too hard of a song.
Maria, I just...
They had a lot of trouble, but finally they did get a producer, Hal Prince, who was a friend of Stephen Sondheim's. And so it opens on September 26th of 1957.
Was it a hit right away?
Well, let me read you some of the reviews. Here's what the New York Daily News had to say about opening night. West Side Story, a splendid and super modern musical drama. Here's the New York Times. Although the material is horrifying, the workmanship is admirable.
The material is horrifying?
Well, you have a musical that has gang violence, an attempted rape, and murder. So it's heavy subject matter. Here's Hal Prince, the original producer.
The show did not, by the way, sell out for the year or so it ran on Broadway. It also had maybe 100 walkouts every single night. People totally confused by what it was and rejecting it.
But what really makes West Side Story the classic it is today is the movie from 1961. People all over were able to see it, and it ends up winning the Oscar for Best Picture. So West Side Story seems like this triumph for Latino representation. But today, as people look back at West Side Story, there are some negative critiques. Scholar and filmmaker Francis Negron Muntaner wrote a paper about it in 2000 that's like 100 pages long. She says, in a general sense, West Side Story is the Puerto Rican Birth of a Nation. You know that film?
Yeah. Birth of a Nation is famously the movie from 1915 where the KKK are portrayed as these American heroes at the expense of Black Americans.
So she's making the argument that in the same way, people still admire Birth of a Nation for its, like, technical aspects, even though its race politics are terrible. People admire West Side Story for its technical aspects without thinking about, like, what the film means and how it portrays Puerto Ricans.
And it's funny because apparently Arthur Lawrence, who actually wrote West Side Story, hated the movie.
Really?
The movie, I thought and still think, was appalling. Film is either realistic or surreal. And a musical, to succeed, needs illusion. And then when the so-called Puerto Ricans came on, made up to look like Day-Glow characters for some caricature of what they think Hispanics are, it was really disgraceful.
Well, that's really progressive of Arthur Lawrence.
Yeah.
Didn't they make Rita Moreno like two shades darker than she actually is?
They did. And they also put on these very fake, exaggerated accents.
I like to be in America. Okay, by me in America.
I watched the movie growing up, and it was one of the few American Latino things that I watched a lot. And I do agree that they're, like, essentially in brownface, and they have, like, really put-on accents. Like, there is a phoniness. But they were definitely not the enemies in the movie. Did the actors who portrayed the Puerto Rican characters in the play, were they Puerto Rican themselves? Do you know that?
Well, Chita Rivera played Anita in the original cast, right? The original Maria was Carol Lawrence.
So Maria, the lead, was played by a white girl.
Yeah, because the movie was Natalie Wood as well, who was a white actress.
Okay, so let's recap what we've learned thus far.
So far, we've got vaudeville and early Broadway with these really stereotypical ethnic caricatures. That takes us to 1957.
That was when West Side Story came out, which was this seminal musical that changed the game. It was like the first one to ever be about Latino lives in New York. But as we learned, it has its problems.
But Robert, the Broadway expert, argues despite all the problems it did have, it basically set the bar for telling stories beyond the white experience.
They talk a lot in the old days about the melting pot, that people from different cultures would come here and would all kind of melt together. But I think what they meant by that was that they would all kind of adopt an Anglo culture. And West Side Story was the first one that indicated that maybe that wasn't 100%. Maybe it was the Anglos who were going to be doing a little bit of the melting.
But we don't get a real American fondue for a little while longer, until this other play that I may be obsessed with comes along.
Dun, dun, dun! For more unabashed singing and some hokey lyrics, stay with us. No te vayas.
Support for NPR and the following message come from Newsy, the TV news channel with honest, in-depth context on the stories that matter. Newsy is for people who aren't satisfied with getting only the loudest part of the story. Newsy delivers more context, more solutions, and greater understanding of the people and events that shape our world. Learn more at newsy.com/watch. We'd like to say a quick thank you and share a message from one of our sponsors, Sony Music Latin, presenting Grammy Award-winning artist Ile, a Puerto Rican singer and composer known for her work with Calle 13. Her debut album, Inevitable, garnered her a Best New Artist nomination at the Latin Grammys and subsequently won the award for Best Latin Rock, Urban, or Alternative Album at the 60th Annual Grammy Awards. Her new single and video, titled Odio, is available everywhere now.
Hi, I'm Daniel Alarcón, host of NPR's Spanish language podcast, Radio Ambulante. This week, a year after the earthquakes that devastated the country, Mexico is still dealing with the aftermath. Schools were especially damaged, and the government promised to rebuild them fast, but two journalists discover that the truth about that reconstruction is much more complicated.
Hey!
We're back. Before the break, we were talking about the history of Latinos on Broadway from all the way back to the vaudeville days up until West Side Story in 1957. I'm back with my fellow producer and Broadway guru on this adventure, Jeannie Montalvo. So are there any musicals between West Side Story and In the Heights?
I married Alberto.
So in the next 50 years, we do see some Latino characters with a little depth, starting in Bye Bye Birdie in 1960.
I'll hide behind my fan and do the tango. I'll be so Spanish, it will make you sick.
Where we're now purposely going overboard on those stereotypes. Instead of laughing at stereotypes, we're going so over the top, you can, in a sense, laugh with us. It's more self-aware.
I'm so excited because I'm going to go to the High School of Performing Arts.
Then, in the 70s, we get A Chorus Line. A Chorus Line has the character Diana Morales, who is an actress who is the opposite of the characters we've seen up until now. Her being Puerto Rican is part of her identity, but there's nothing stereotypical about her.
They don't have bobsleds in San Juan.
Then a few years after that, we have Evita. As an Argentine American, I assume that you know Evita. Am I right?
I've actually never seen Evita.
Oh my God! Why have you never seen Evita when it's about your people?
I think because it's too weird for me to like watch that part of history in a play or something. I know the song, obviously.
Don't cry for me, Argentina.
We need to have a musical marathon. Moving on. So that was 1979. Now we hit the 90s. There's a few musicals, but the biggest comes at the end of the decade. It's called The Cape Man.
I've been sleeping on the roof of my bed.
What's that?
The Cape Man I had never heard of.
Yeah, me neither.
So it was written by Paul Simon. The cast was like a who's who of salsa. Like Marc Anthony was in it. Ruben Blades is in it.
I was born in Puerto Rico.
So let me read you the synopsis. It's based on the true story of Salvador Agron, who murdered two teenagers in the 1950s but turned his life around while in prison. It's very
dark.
It's
about a Puerto Rican kid who murdered two people?
Yeah. But despite its all-star Latino cast and Paul Simon on the credits, it just didn't do well.
Hanging out with boys from Lexington and Park.
So we've moved away from being the punchline, right? And now we've got stories on stage, but we've got one about gang violence and we've got another one about a teenager who murdered two other teenagers.
Yeah, not the, like, prettiest image ever.
Exactly. Until...
In the Heights.
Okay, so... In the Heights is the brainchild of Lin-Manuel Miranda.
Heard of him.
Really? I don't know. Maybe you've heard of him because of a little musical called Hamilton. But we are here to tell you about the musical that he composed before Hamilton. Here's Lin-Manuel Miranda talking about the show in a PBS documentary called Chasing Broadway Dreams.
I started writing In the Heights my sophomore year at Wesleyan University. At first it was... I want to write the kind of musical I would want to be in. I also saw Rent, and it was the first time I'd seen a musical that took place now. And a light bulb really went off, and I was like, oh, you can write like a musical about you, about your life.
So for listeners, this is going to be a little bit of a spoiler if you haven't seen it, but In the Heights takes place in Washington Heights in this neighborhood in upper Manhattan. And it's basically just takes place over the course of a weekend. It's July 4th, and it's about community, right? And Usnavi, the main character, owns a bodega with his cousin that he inherited from his parents. So the central conflict is he gets the chance to move to the Dominican Republic, and he's trying to figure out whether New York is home or the Dominican Republic is home.
Because I immigrated from the single greatest little place in the Caribbean, Dominican Republic. I love it. Jesus, I'm jealous of it.
Lin-Manuel's from New York. His background is Puerto Rican. So he's kind of like, he's coming from a space where he really knows.
Yeah, where he knows.
He knows what's up.
He gave a real name like Usnavi.
Yeah.
No white person... writing a musical would have known to name a Hispanic character that.
Your father said, Usnavi, that's what we'll name the baby.
It really said U.S. Navy,
but hey.
The set design is a corner in Washington Heights. The cast sings on the fire escapes. They're running in and out of the bodega and around the subway stop. And through the course of the weekend, somebody wins the lottery.
Somebody won!
96,000.
The blackouts in Manhattan happen.
Blackout!
The salon is closing, so it's like dealing with gentrification. And Usnavi the whole time is kind of searching for where is home, which is like the first gen conundrum.
So how does In the Heights get made? How do they decide to greenlight it?
Well, it's very different from the 1950s in West Side Story, right? In this case, you don't have the creators reading about the community in the paper and writing their story. You have creators who actually lived it.
I remember getting a cassette tape of the show and popping it into my stereo, and the first thing that I heard was the sound of buckets, like the way you have stupid percussionists playing buckets. My name is Alex Lockamore, and for In the Heights, I was the original music director. I became the music supervisor, and I was the co-arranger and co-orchestrator with Bill Sherman. And I heard Lin-Manuel Miranda's voice rapping on top of it, and I thought it was just the coolest thing because, like, I love that he was mixing Spanglish into the stuff. It was something that was unlike anything that I had ever heard, and it really grabbed me.
So Alex Lackamore got a mixtape.
And at that point, Lin-Manuel was like a nobody, right?
I mean, you know, he's a kid fresh out of college, excited about this musical that he's been working on.
Mm-hmm.
But the material was so good that people were like, this is amazing. I have to do this, right?
One of these things that you really love about art is when you can see yourself in art, whether you see yourself represented on stage in a show, whether you hear about a story that deals with the family and that family has something that you feel like you can connect to. Like hearing a song where the title and the punchline was No Me Diga, which is something that I hear day in and day out in my daily life. It's not every day that you get to have a song on Broadway that has that kind of sentiment to it, that has that kind of connection. And all of a sudden you just hear something like that and you feel like they're speaking to just you. And it's like, oh my God, like they know me. How is that possible?
And for the cast, they told me that they'd never been part of a production like this.
I'm Robin De Jesus, and I played Sonny De La Vega in the show.
Yo, we're 96,000, I finally fixed housing.
My name is Mandy Gonzalez, and I played Nina Rosario in In the Heights.
I used to think we lived at the
What is seemingly less romantic, but is most romantic to me about the thinking back about that experience was it was the first time where I wasn't the token Latino in the room.
Mm-hmm.
It was the first time where it was a piece about Latinos written by a Latino. And so there was an authenticity there that I had not experienced before. I didn't feel the need to be a dramaturg and be like, actually, we wouldn't say it that way.
Mm-hmm.
We wouldn't do that. There was no need for that.
And we were rooting each other on. Like, it wasn't like
yes.
We had to compete for the one role. We were all the roles.
100%.
And so that was different, and that felt good.
Mandy's character, Nina Rosario, questions what life would have been like if her parents had never left Puerto Rico.
Who would I be if I had never seen Manhattan? If I lived in Puerto Rico?
Her character is also the first to go away to college.
I got every scholarship, saved every dollar, the first to go to college.
So it's not just one Latino story. It's like you have all of these characters with individual issues.
I remember when we moved into the theater, usually the tradition with actors is we set up our dressing room for the beginning of the run, but we don't want to get too cozy because we don't know if the show's going to last or not.
Right.
So you wait a couple weeks to see how tickets are selling, how the reviews are.
You don't get any pillows.
You don't
maybe
buy
like
things.
A picture of your friends.
You hold, yeah, you family. Pull back. I moved in. I came in with a truck. I was like, this show's going to run. I know it's going to happen. I got photos for days. I got a good mat. I got a good chair. I bought like a Pilates ball chair.
You did. I remember that.
I went in because I was like, no, we are here.
We're
gonna
run.
I am claiming this land. We are colonizing it this time.
So wait, when did In the Heights open?
So the way Broadway works is usually you're off Broadway first for a few months, like the minor leagues, right? If you do well, you go to Broadway, the major leagues. In the Heights opens on Broadway in March of 2008.
We had two opening nights, because there was off-Broadway opening night, and then there was Broadway opening
night. And it's always a good party.
It's always
when Lynn
a good
has a party,
party,
it's always good.
What?
Because
the
and
ancestors
also all of us,
show up.
Oh my goodness.
With Broadway opening nights, they can be really gloomy, because the night that the show opens and you have the party is the same night the reviews come out, and people head to their phones and start reading the review.
If they're not good, you see that the party stops. Like, people start to leave. You know, it's like a baseball game. If, like, your home team isn't winning, like, all of a sudden you're like, why is everybody going? Like, the music's still playing, and you're like, oh, the show's gonna close. Like, but this show, everybody partied until... maybe.
One
so you knew we were, you know,
living our lives.
Yeah, we were going to be able to do it a little bit longer.
Yeah.
That's so cool. I didn't know that that's how the opening parties were.
And opening night was super emotional. Here's Alex, the musical director, again.
Up until that point, I had been working on the show for about 3 years straight, it feels like. And then we got to the finale. And then I don't know what came over me, but maybe I was just thinking about how much work had been put into it. And I had the best seat in the house. I'm conducting, playing piano. I'm looking up at Lynn, and he's right up in front of me rapping. And then he goes, and I could say goodbye to his smile and upon my island. I've been on it this whole time. I'm home. And then people started singing, the hydrants are open. I just started crying. I lost it. And I'm conducting at that point. I'm getting teary now thinking about it. And my hands were just waving and my head was down with tears just like flying out of my eyes. Music in the air, take the train.
It's also nice seeing, I mean, we're comparing this story to West Side Story. Obviously, West Side Story is like very tragic ending. And ultimately, it's like very, it's a kind of cynical view of the Latino experience. And to see this completely different narrative in which the main character, you know, not only feels at home in America, but like is a depiction of what an American is. That's a huge change in the sort of portrayal on stage.
Yes. And Robert Viagas, the founder of Playbill.com, says that In the Heights was successful in a very American way.
We want something that's exciting, entertaining, tells a good story, etc., but also something that is a financial success, something that sells them a lot of tickets, sells millions of dollars worth of tickets, wins a million awards. That's kind of that's what I mean by successful in an American way.
And it won 4 Tonys. One of those was Best Musical.
2008 Tony Award goes to In the Heights.
So you remember earlier when Robert was talking about the melting pot and how West Side Story started the trend that maybe Anglos should be doing the melting? He goes on to say that Lynn really understood that.
He threw all those stereotypes away. He managed to get the melting pot to work in reverse. And I think that ultimately is the great success of In the Heights.
It has a movie deal.
That's exciting. And that's probably what's going to propagate it to be the West Side Story of our generation.
Exactly.
So in some ways you could say that In the Heights gets right what West Side Story got wrong.
Yeah, West Side Story put us on the stage. But In the Heights set a new bar about what a Latino story could be.
So Latinos, we've been on Broadway, we're gonna stay on Broadway, and I'm so thankful, Jeannie, that you brought us all of this amazing Latino history on Broadway.
De nada.
Thanks to Jeannie Montalvo for that story. In the Heights' 10th anniversary 3-LP vinyl box set is now available from Ghostlight Records. Thanks to Jeff London, freelance reporter of NPR series 50 Years of West Side Story. This episode was reported by Jeannie Montalvo and edited by Sofia Paliza Carr. Special thanks to Martin Sainville of the Broadway League and Robert Viagas, founder of Playbill.com. The Leonard Bernstein clip was from the Dramatist Guild. The Arthur Lawrence clip is from an NPR story reported by Tom Manoff. The Latino USA team includes Miguel Macias, Andres Caballero, Maggie Freeling, Janice Yamoka, and Sayer Quevedo. Our senior editor is Marlon Bishop. Our engineers are Jeannie Montalvo and Stephanie LeBeau. Our production manager is Natalia Fiedelholz. Our fellows are Virginia Lora and Jesse Alejandro Cottrell. Our intern is Paola Mora. Our theme music was composed by Xenia Rubinos. If you like the music you heard on this episode, stop by latinousa.org and check out our weekly Spotify playlist. I'm your host for this episode of The Breakdown, Antonia Cerejido, and our executive producer is Maria Hinojosa. Join us again next time, and in the meantime, you can find us on social media. Ciao!
Latino USA is made possible in part by the Ford Foundation, working with visionaries on the front lines of social change worldwide. New York Women's Foundation. The New York Women's Foundation, funding women leaders that build solutions in their communities and celebrating 30 years of radical generosity. And Winecote Foundation.
Once more with feeling.
La, la, la.
You're not even on the same key.
I know. I can't.
Give me jazz fingers. Next time on Latino USA, we continue talking Broadway with a conversation with Latin jazz maestro Bobby Sanabria and a rethinking of the Broadway classic West Side Story.
Hi, this is Peter Sagal. For 20 years, Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me has been making fun of the news with comedians and celebrity guests. We got silly limericks. We got terrible impressions. If you think the news is a joke, wait till you hear our show. New podcast episodes are available every Saturday.